Nation, Manx Radio.
This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service.
Manx Radio.
Two doctors, a big anniversary, a Celtic saint, and some original Manx music. That's what's in store for you in today's programme. And we start with some music. Composed by Annie Kizak and sung by Manx choir Kirjin Kujak, this is a musical setting of the great prayer of praise that features in so many of our church services. Glory to God in the highest. Kirjin Kujak and Glory to God in the Highest. And that's just one of the main prayers from the Mass which Annie Kizak has translated into Manx and set to music. And there'll be more during the course of my conversation with two doctors, Dr. Tim Grass, an academic and a reader in the Anglican Church, and Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett, Chair of District of the Methodist Church on the Island. Manx-born and, as you'll hear, with a deep commitment to the use of the Manx language in worship. Today they're joining me to talk about an important anniversary that's gathering momentum and during the autumn is going to offer much for us to join in and enjoy. So, Tim and Janet, welcome. And Tim, maybe you'd like to start the story.
Yes, 2025 marks the 250th anniversary of the publication of the Manx Bible in one volume. There had been thoughts of doing this under Bishop Wilson in the first half of the 18th century, but he didn't get much further than securing the translation of Matthew's Gospel. In 1755, he died, and his successor, Bishop Hildersley, immediately made it a priority of his ministry to get the Bible and the Book of Common Prayer translated and published in Manx. until that point, what had happened was that the clergy in the churches on the island had copies of the Bible and the Book of Common Prayer in English, and the practice was to make extemporary translations on the hoof from English into Manx. Now, of course, the trouble with that was, one, you couldn't guarantee that they would all have the same translation, and two, that most of the clergy, of course, would have had Manx as their first language, and their grasp of English could have been a bit shaky, and therefore they might have been less than sure what they were translating. And three, you therefore got bishops who were dead worried that the clergy were in fact going to be saying something terribly heretical in the pulpit.
Janet, can I bring you in on the conversation here? Now, you have a passion for the authentic use of the Manx language. How important is the Bible in the Manx language?
Well, people were able to hear the Bible in their mother tongue, in their heart language, able to hear for the first time the words of Jesus, for example, spoken in Manx. And that isn't just about understanding, that's about affirmation. And it's about knowing that God speaks Manx, I think.
Janet, I want to pick you up on a word there, heart language.
I think it's what resonates with your identity, who you are, that gives you that sense of, yes, I'm made in the image of God, I'm Manx, I want to be fully myself, and all those things. And of course, I've worked in many different countries with many different cultures and languages. And the response I would get if I could say at least something, even if it was just one little song or trying a Bible verse in their language, it was phenomenal, the sense of really affirming them and who they were.
What kind of response are you having to the bilingual services?
It's been really interesting because when I tried to get them off the ground, it was really quite hard work. And that was partly finding people who wanted to help, who spoke good enough Manx, because I'm very much a learner, then finding the material, putting it together, and then encouraging people to come. So people had lots of questions, whether it would be twice as long as a normal service, because we were doing everything in Manx and English. But gradually, interest has picked up, and I've had some interesting responses, for example, from people who are on farms, who are, you know, the what you might say, the real Manx, who only come for that service because they say, well, you know, this is for me and I relate to it. And I think people who've come to the island recently from countries, for example, like Namibia, where they have a language which is being swamped by Afrikaans, they immediately came and took an interest because they were thinking, wow, you know, this is the same as us. You know, we want to keep a language alive.
Are you finding that non-Manx speakers are coming out of curiosity and developing an interest?
Yes, so there are people coming because their kids are learning Manx at school. It's a good place to talk Manx with other people, and there aren't many spaces to do that. There are some people coming because they're interested in the music. So if Ruth's singing or Krista's playing the harp, you know, that's very attractive for people to come. Yeah, plenty of interest from many, many different people, and people who may not normally go to church as well. Each time we do a bilingual, we have a theme. One was on Brescia, St. Bridget. Before that, we had peace. And we've actually commissioned new translated songs. And we've done Hidden Treasures, Is Trade a Lure, A Spiritual Discipline, talked about the treasures of the Manx heritage, culture, and how that will enrich the church.
Yeah.
Kirjin Kujak with soloist Ruth Kegin-Gell, and another translation and musical setting by Annie Kissack, Lord Have Mercy, Christ Have Mercy. And now back to Dr. Tim Grass and Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett. So take us back 250 years, and Bishop Hildersley made the translation his priority. What happened next?
Most of the clergy on the island took a share in translating it. Each of them was assigned a particular book of the Bible or a part of a book, and they knock out a translation. And then there were a couple of editors who were also some of the island clergy who would review the translations and scribble all over them. Some of the drafts are still in the Manx Museum, and revise them. And then the whole thing was combined into one. And initially the Bible was printed bit by bit, not all at once. And there's a famous story of how the last bit was the second half of the Old Testament. And John Kelly, one of the folk who was overseeing the translation, was sailing to Whitehaven and got shipwrecked. And the story goes that he was in the water for 5 hours holding this precious manuscript aloft to stop it from being destroyed, and was rescued so that it could then be sorted out once, presumably, he'd been dried off and given a new suit of clothes.
So now we're celebrating the 250th anniversary. So what prompted this
trip to Colorado? Last September, Anne, my wife, and I were off to Colorado for a holiday. And as part of that, we were meeting up with some friends who asked us to go to their church, and they were going to take us out to lunch. And of course, we were looking at what we could take as a sort of thank you gift. And it's nice to take something Manx. But being the US, you can't take anything edible because it would be confiscated on arrival. So I have a stock of old first day covers of Manx stamps to do with church history themes. So I thought I'll have a look in there and see if I've got something that they'd like. And the top one on the list, lo and behold, 200th anniversary of the Manx Bible, 1975. And Anne said, well, you know what next year is then, don't you? So the next day, we sat upstairs at Ronald's Way with a post-it pad, furiously scribbling down notes of different things that you could do to celebrate the occasion. And then Anne took a picture on her phone of the post-it notes neatly arranged on the table, and we sent it to the archdeacon and the bishop's chaplain and said, how about doing something to mark the 250th anniversary of the Manx Bible? To which the considered response was, great idea, you do it. We got a working group together. There's several of us from different churches on the island, but it's quite an open arrangement. So we've also been consulting with various other church bodies and cultural bodies on the island, because we think this is something for everybody. Because one of the things that is very clear is that the Bible played a seminal role in Manx culture, not just in terms of feeding people's faith and devotion, but in terms of things like fixing the way the language is spelt. And it's still used as a text for people studying the Manx language. So the Bible has a very interesting place in the culture. And to us, that made it worth exploring what we could do outside the walls of the churches.
The working group, we've put to them some of the things that we're looking for other churches to get involved with, and everyone was coming up with good ideas. So it's not like we're saying we're going to do X, Y, and Z. It's also saying this is a great anniversary. Different churches and different bodies might like to celebrate it in different ways.
And that way you also pull in, as Tim was just saying a moment ago, you've got not just church bodies involved, but you've got historians involved and culture van in, of course. So you're going to get lots of different approaches. And this is going to be a programme of things that will just evolve.
That's the plan. There'll be a variety of things, like the travelling exhibition. I'm particularly keen to try and do some Bible stories in Manx, in easy Manx for children or for adult learners, and have them in a bilingual volume with a Manx artist or Manx style pictures to go along. You know, maybe 4 or 5 parables, something like that. Be really lovely to be able to give to all the kids in the school or to have in each library.
To what degree can you get the Bible Society internationally to get involved in that? Because to have somebody to take it on, publish and publicise it would obviously be the dream. Tim, do you think that's possible?
We have had a lot of conversations with various folk at the Bible Society over the last few weeks. Basically, we are pushing an open door. They are very, very enthusiastic. They were already aware that this was to be the 250th anniversary. And in fact, they have recently released a Manx Bible app. And if you go, I think it's called the Global Bible website, you will find Manx there. And that's an edition that has been carefully reviewed to get rid of some of the typos that were in the printed Manx Bible a couple of hundred years ago and such like. So they are really positive about the app, but also about various possibilities for publication. So the whole celebration is still developing before our eyes.
Janet, from your perspective of being so genuinely so keen about the language, you must be very excited about this.
I think it's a great opportunity. On the island, we have a good bush telegraph, but it takes some big events sometimes for people to really hear this history. You know, a lot of people won't be aware of the history. It'll be a year where hopefully we can engage a lot of people, not just ecumenically, but from outside of the churches. And I'm keen to atone for the sins of John Wesley, who didn't like the Manx language, and show that the Methodist Church is encouraging and enabling the reading of the Bible in Manx and worship in the Manx language too.
Adder Colum Killia, St. Columba's Blessing from Kirjan Kujak, conducted by Annie Kizik. And my thanks to my guests this morning, Dr. Tim Grass and Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett. And there'll be more details very soon about the ways that the island will be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the Bible in Manx, including a special church service, an exhibition in the cathedral, and what promises to be a fascinating day of talks in the Eye Museum in early October. As we say, watch this space. And now, a little reflection on the life of St. Cuthbert, who lived in the 7th century and was a saint of the early Northumbrian Church in the Celtic tradition. He was a monk, bishop, and hermit. Both during his life and after his death, he became a popular medieval saint of Northern England. His tomb is in Durham Cathedral. Some denominations celebrate his feast on the 20th of March, and others on the 4th of September, which was just last Thursday. We get a little insight into the nature of the saintly Cuthbert with words from David Adam.
Cuthbert went into the Cheviots with a young boy. He was teaching the boy how to preach the gospel. They were learning psalms and learning a gospel off by heart as they went. For the boy it was unfortunate because it was a Friday, and that meant that Cuthbert and he would not eat until 3 in the afternoon. That was the time Jesus died on the cross. They shared preaching in a farm, and they were offered lunch. Cuthbert declined, though the boy would have gladly eaten, and said, "We must move on, and we shall not eat until 3. At about 3 o'clock, he turned to the boy and said, "Where do we find food?" Now, if I was the boy, I'd have given him a kick. Cuthbert had not brought the picnic. But typical of this great saint, Cuthbert put his hands out, made the shape of the cross with his body, and began to pray. As he prayed, flying high overhead came an eagle. The eagle dived into the stream and brought out a salmon. Cuthbert said to the boy, "Go and get the salmon." So he did, as he was told. But then Cuthbert said, "You should not have done that. You should have shared with the eagle." So he had to go back and give the eagle a portion of the salmon. Then the boy thought, "Lovely, I love salmon steaks." But Cuthbert said, "We cannot eat that. We can't keep it to ourselves. Let's go into the hills and find a poor family, and we will share it with them." Such was the way of Cuddy. He shared what he had, and he believed and proved the power of prayer.
Kirjan Kujak singing the Manx translation of "Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world, have mercy on us." And David Adam shared an incident in the life of St. Cuthbert of Lindisfarne, whose feast day was last Thursday. And as usual, we finish with a look at our notice board. And if you're already up and dressed, there might just be time to get to St Thomas's Church here in Douglas, just off the promenade near the Gaiety Theatre, where there's a pet service this morning at 11 o'clock. All furry friends are welcome, as well as photos of pets who might not enjoy sitting in church. And as always at St Thomas's, there'll be refreshments afterwards. And staying in St Thomas's, this Wednesday evening, it's the last of their very popular summer concerts. They're finishing in fine style this Wednesday, the 10th, with an hour of music from Shenanigans, led by Andrew Holmes. That's the usual starting time of 7:45, with free admission, refreshments afterwards, and a retiring collection. And there's still more music at St Thomas's later this week. Popular and very skilled organist John Riley will give an organ concert in St Thomas's Church this Saturday, the 13th, at 11 a.m. John will play a selection of well-known and popular pieces for organ. There'll be a retiring collection. And if you'd like to stay on for lunch after the concert, soup and a variety of puddings will be available for a minimum donation of £7. Booking for the lunch is essential, please, via email to John, and his address is johnr6755@gmail.com. johnr6755@gmail.com. No booking is needed for the concert. That's just free admission. Everyone's welcome. Back to today, and the Mariners Choir begin their very popular Sunday evening services tonight at 6:30 in Bigarrow Chapel on the main road just outside Kirkmichael. Reverend Richard Hooton will preach, and as usual, the service will be followed by supper and community hymn singing, with a warm welcome for all. It's a busy week in St Olive's Church on Bowring Road in Ramsey. This Wednesday, the 10th, they're hosting the Manic Ukas, the Manx ukulele band, for an evening of music starting at 7 p.m. And the Manic Ukas will be followed by some live jazz music. Then the evening ends with a light supper, all for just £5. Then on Friday the 12th, there'll be a quiz in the hall behind St Olive's Church. The hall is opposite Ramsey Cottage Hospital, and Friday's quiz starts at 7 p.m. There's still a couple more Thursday night concerts to enjoy in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin. This week's concert will be given by another popular choir, Sheehan and Millish. It starts at 7:30 with free admission, refreshments afterwards, and a retiring collection. On Friday evening, there's a Beetle Drive in Union Mills Methodist Chapel. It's from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Admission is free, refreshments will be provided, and it's fun for all the family. On now to Saturday the 13th, and the Island Spirituality Network resume their monthly Saturday morning meetings in St John's Mill. The speaker this coming Saturday is Stephen Hoyland from the Jesuit Institute, and his theme will be "Who Do You Say That I Am?" The Jesus Who Turns Up in Our Prayers. Everyone's welcome. The morning starts at 10 a.m. and ends at 1 p.m. with a coffee break halfway through. That's this Saturday morning in St John's Mill. On Saturday evening, the Summer Singers will be in concert in St Paul's Church in Ramsey. It starts at 7:30, admission is free, and there'll be light refreshments afterwards. And finally, next Sunday the 14th, there'll be a slightly different harvest celebration in Sulby. It's a harvest festival cantata with Gareth Moore and singers. That's in Sulby Methodist Church, the one at the crossroads in Sulby Village, next Sunday afternoon at 2:30. Admission is £10, which includes refreshments after the concert. And that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, your invitation to join me in our virtual lounge for late night listening with your requests and dedications. And I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week, and a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.